This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Off the ball, GAA.
It all depends on fitness, and it's a lot with the club, you know. Brian Stack is like the master key. He can do a lot of jobs there, and if he's out, you know, there's a lot of fires to put out as well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Very good evening to you. You're welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. We're on your radio until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we're getting the dream team together here in studio. Jerry Thornley and Andy Dunn joining us for Monday Night Rugby from 8 p.m. It was a good weekend in the Champions Cup. I haven't said that in a long, long time, but it was a good weekend in the Champions Cup. Thrilling encounters involving both Munster and Leinster, I think it's fair to say. I think that is factual. Maybe we're going to have to, you know, pay no attention to some of the other fixtures around the continent, but certainly the ones involving the two Irish teams were very, very enjoyable. So looking forward to chatting to the lads between 8 and 9 tonight. From 9 o'clock, then, a packed football show coming your way. Henry Winter is going to hop on and chat FA Cup, Manchester United, and also we'll be covering the developing story that's come out in the last hour or so that Xabi Alonso has been sacked by Real Madrid. When I say developing, I mean, what does this mean for a number of other clubs around the continent? Is Arne Slot, for example, sitting a little less comfortably right now, given Xabi Alonso's out of a job? We shall see. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Michael McCarthy is back in studio. Hello, Mick.
Good evening, Owen.
And for the first time in 2026, it's a very good evening to Stephen Doyle.
Good evening, lads. The real dream team.
The real dream
Mick
team.
Mick and Steve-o.
Welcome back. I mean, happy 2026. How's your January been so far?
I'll say one thing. I always kind of box off a couple of days annual leave for Christmas time, just to make sure you got time with the family and all that kind of stuff. But I misjudged it this year, and I ended up with a few days that I had to take in January, which was all of last week. And it is the worst time of the year to be off. I'm sitting there in the house kind of going, like, all my friends are at work, family's at work, and it's like lashing rain, it's grey, it's dull. Kind of going, I could have been using these days off in the middle of the summer. This is, what was I thinking?
Is it not one of the best times of the year to have off, because it just extends your Christmas break? Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. There's just nothing to do. You sit around kind of like, oh. Yeah, well, I did end up kind of watching a lot of TV series and that kind of stuff. So I watched that Nuremberg film. It's actually quite good. I don't know if you've
haven't seen it yet, no.
Russell Crowe.
Yeah, yeah.
Recommend it, yeah, yeah.
Sky have been pushing that down our throats for the last
decade. Sure,
it does look good, to be fair, but yeah. I haven't seen it.
Got stuck into Tokyo Vice as well, have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, also one of those that I haven't
seen, really good.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
So, because we didn't take a week off.
That's it. We're behind the cultural zeitgeist as a result of Steve-O taking a week off. But I think the main reason why you've taken a week off is that you just don't really care too much about the FA Cup. As chief Premier League commentator and off the ball, you just look down your nose at the FA Cup.
Listen.
Couldn't be bothered with turning on the TV for Macclesfield.
Yeah, no, listen, I don't want to see any of that trash. Can I just say, Oliver Glasner, listen, we saw him, we did a press conference with him after the Shamrock or the Shelburne game a few weeks back, comes across an absolute gent. He's obviously a good coach because of what he's achieved, but I think some people might be getting a bit carried away with him because, he played a pretty decent side against Macclesfield. Like, there was a couple of, you know, players that came off the bench to start that game. But with the team he had available to him, they had to win that match. Like, it's incredible. Like, what a story for Macclesfield. And I always love when a player with a bandage wins like a glorious game of football. Like, it's a head bandage. It always makes look.
They call it a Terry Butcher bandage on the BBC, but we obviously call it a Kevin Moran bandage.
Yeah. Oh, like, wow. You know, I was going to go Willie Joe Patton there. Sorry.
Well, okay, sorry. It was a footballer. So. Yeah.
But just, and I keep seeing more and more Palace fans saying, this guy is brilliant at devising tactics when a team are under pressure, soaking up pressure, hitting teams on the break. Obviously, Daniel Munoz has been a big loss to them over the last few weeks. But I just think the likes of, you know, Manchester United, Liverpool, these big clubs that might be looking at an Oliver Glasner, I'm not convinced, I have to say, I'm not convinced.
Well, it's kind of one of those lose-lose situations. Like, they would have got zero credit for winning this game on Saturday. And the only reason anybody's talking about this fixture is because they've been beaten in embarrassing circumstances. The biggest gap between a winner and a loser in the Football League pyramid in the history of an FA Cup upset. So as a result of that, you're kind of factoring that into Glasner and his reputation now when it comes to potentially his next job. A little bit.
Maybe, it's in that subconscious. Like, we're burying the lead a little bit, though, as in, like, who really cares about Oliver Glasner and Crystal Palace in the grand scheme of things? You know, and
it's definitely
like,
not
them
the
winning
story.
The FA Cup was the story last year, and then their first defence of it, they go out to a team in the sixth tier and go out kind of fairly convincingly. And again, with, like, a half decent starting lineup with a lot of names coming off the bench, and it was a brilliant occasion. Like, it was just one of those things that was just like all of the way, you know, the romance of it in the way it stacked up with it being Palace who had their biggest moment in their club's history the last time they played an FA Cup match, and now have provided the biggest shock and Macclesfield's biggest moment. You know, I just love that the last champions to be knocked out by a non-league team.
Wolves in 1906.
There you go, was it? Yeah. By?
That I don't know.
Crystal Palace.
Ah.
Non-league Crystal Palace.
That's a very tidy narrative.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what I'm saying.
Britain
in
the
Stars?
How
could you not love this? Like, everything about it was just brilliant. And I don't know, you just see the scenes around it. And it's not to be over kind of like, look, I'm as cynical as the next man. And I'll dig down into an Oliver Glasner takedown with you, Steve-O, any day of the week, right? But surely at some point you have to just look at that on a Sunday morning and say, this is what the game's all about. And we don't get enough of that anymore for us to overlook it, because it's hardly there in football anymore. It is just a money game. Like, you know, you heard Henrik Larsson last week talking about just not loving the game anymore because it's literally just all about money. It's like, kind of understand where he's coming from, you know? But you see something like that and you're like, right, that's pure, you know?
I would consider myself completely brainwashed by the money and the elitism of football to the point where I didn't really care too much about the FA Cup this weekend. The two fixtures that I would have, you know, cared most about were the Aston Villa game and the Manchester United game.
Yeah.
No coincidence that they were both all Premier League clashes.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Manchester United thing comes with a separate set of narrative at the moment. But after that, certainly Spurs against Aston Villa would have been the next fixture that I would have watched. Macclesfield versus Crystal Palace would not have been on my radar going into the weekend.
No.
It's only in hindsight that it becomes a story. And
that's fair. Like, that's
The expectation of romance just doesn't exist in my worldview of football anymore. Like, maybe through the Republic of Ireland, or maybe through some League of Ireland stories, but when it comes to cross-channel football, I just do not associate the idea of romance with it anymore, or watching it for the soul of it. Like, my soul is corrupted and darkened by football that I watch just purely for the high-level stuff. If it's not two elite teams going toe-to-toe, my behaviour suggests that I just don't want to know about it.
Yeah, it's funny.
Which I'm sad about.
I can't remember. One of the Exeter players put up an Instagram post, which I don't know, I just saw it somewhere else. He put up an Instagram post of him coming out of the tunnel at the Etihad Stadium going, oh, such a proud day, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then getting loads of abuse from Exeter City fans under it, saying, you bloody well lost 10-1, mate. A highlight of his career, you know, to play against Manchester City in the Premier League.
And also, another thing that's corrupting the way in which we watch football right now is the first thing I did when I saw the Manchester City 10 Exeter 1 scoreline, a game which I just happened to not be watching, was I looked through the scores and I was like, no, Haaland goal. Imagine if that happened in the Premier League and how FPL managers would be up in arms about Manchester City scoring 10 goals and Erling Haaland didn't even get on the score sheet once.
So, I have to say,
a terrible football fan.
Yeah, with fantasy NFL being over and it being an off week, I enjoyed not having anything to panic about on Friday. I didn't have to put down anything, you know, no logging in at the last minute. That's the best part about the FA Cup weekend. And then Macclesfield and then Villa beating Spurs. That's the top three.
We do have one more FA Cup clash this evening. So it's two more FA Cup clashes, I should say, but there is one this evening. It's Liverpool against Conor Hourihan's Barnsley on the agenda. I'm sure we'll get to that in tonight's news round, Steve-O, but we are going to start with matters in Spain.
Indeed, because Real Madrid today confirmed the departure of Xabi Alonso after a run of 28 games in charge as head coach. He won 20 of those matches. Alonso, though, has left by mutual consent and has been replaced by his former Los Blancos, Liverpool and Spain teammate Alvaro Arbeloa, who steps up from coaching the club's reserves. The decision comes a day after Real lost to Barcelona in the Spanish Super Cup final in Saudi Arabia. They currently sit second in La Liga, 4 points behind Barcelona, and seventh in the Champions League table. Alonso had 3 seasons previously at Bayer Leverkusen, with whom he won a Bundesliga and German Cup double and also reached the Europa League final.
Yeah, there's no coming back from a 3-2 Supercoppa loss in Saudi Arabia as Real Madrid manager. This is a lot to do with what Xabi Alonso does next as opposed to what happens next with Real Madrid. So Arbeloa, what are the terms of his deal? This is longer than a caretaker job, right? This is... He's going in as...
They've announced him as
manager.
As caretaker, yeah.
So, but I think there is some suspicion that this might be until the end of the season. The terms and the length has not been disclosed yet. So, in fairness, you see a lot of really, really good, you know, Spanish football beat writers are chasing at the moment, and they're kind of like, they're finding out details as we go. But from what I can see, they're a little bit suspicious that he's been announced as the head coach, but it's not necessarily on a long-term deal. But as far as Madrid have said, he's the new head coach. So I suppose we'll see. Do you really have any longer until the end of the season anyway, when you're Madrid? Like, you know, Alonso just lasted, 6 months?
We've just spent the last week talking about the vacancy at Old Trafford. We've been speaking quite a bit about maybe a vacancy coming up at Tottenham Hotspur very soon. Arne Slot is not a man who's resting too easy at the moment either. I'm sure they'll win tonight against Barnsley. Xabi Alonso is a very attractive proposition to any club. The Liverpool thing makes sense. But what other implications do we think this could have around European football at the moment? Because it feels like this is a big few months. Whatever about what's going to happen now is one thing. But after the World Cup, it feels like there's going to be some seismic managerial changes.
And is Pep going to stay at Man City? We don't know either. Like, is Alonso's reputation damaged here?
Not too much, I don't think.
I think you're probably right. I when he went in the summer, and it's not just hindsight looking back at this, we said it at the time, I thought he was mad. Like, and I do... It's hard to turn down, right? Completely understand that. And there's an allure, and he's a former player and so on. But it just seemed like the wrong fit. And what he built at Leverkusen was this something special. And eventually you do have to step up. But it seemed like Real Madrid was the exact wrong place for him to go. And funny, and it's all worked out, and it's been an even bigger calamity than you possibly thought it could be. But almost because of that, maybe he does get a free pass. Maybe there's just an acceptance out there that Real Madrid's its own unique case. Nothing can be put up against that. You will be able to build your own culture almost everywhere else. And it's funny, as much as we've been talking about the state of Chelsea and Manchester United and the way they build things over the last week or so, nothing compares to the way Madrid do it.
No, they're on a whole other level. They're 7th in the Champions League, which maybe isn't as high as their honorary leader, Perez, would want them to be. They're 4 points behind Barcelona in La Liga as well. So not a disastrous start to the season by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe the one thing you could say is that it's such a large percentage of Xabi Alonso's managerial career so far that the Bayer Leverkusen thing is still a small sample size. Like, you can't still make a case that was a crazy overachievement with that team. It doesn't diminish it, but it was still just a very short part of his CV. So I wouldn't be surprised if some clubs are just unsure of what Xabi Alonso will bring in terms of security. But the Liverpool thing would be like, it would just be a perfect match, you think, or would just make sense, especially if they are going to part with Slot. But
yeah, see, the thing with Slot, though, is that he is Richard Hughes' appointment. And unless he goes on a disastrous run between now and the end of the season, I can't see Richard Hughes getting rid of Arne Slot. So you're kind of thinking, well, where does he go then? Wait till the summertime. You know, Bayern Munich are well served by fancy company. There's no other club really who would feel he might go in there, especially having managed already at Bayer Leverkusen. So then where else is he looking? Will Hansi Flick remain at Barcelona after the summertime? Don't know. Where else in the Premier League can he go? Like, Thomas Frank could be on borrowed time. Like,
Barcelona.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Spurs appointed him? You know, and like maybe that's the quality of coach that Spurs need to be looking at. A man who, you know, I think that's kind of system that he plays. I think it is something that he could bring to Tottenham. Like where else you got? Manchester City, maybe, if Pep Guardiola is leaving. Obviously, all the talk's been Enzo Maresca, but if Xabi Alonso is available, you know, and I'm sure he's the type of man who could have a good relationship with the people behind the scenes at Manchester City as well. So,
yeah, not sure I want to segue necessarily into Saturday night. We might talk about it a little bit later on, but I was at a realization watching Spurs. I think Alonso would be mad to go there. I think you have to start thinking about what Spurs are rather than what they were. And this isn't an argument about size of clubs or Big Six or anything like that, right? But I was thinking about this, just looking at the, and I know they have a lot of injuries, but even the injuries they have, what level are they at? This is a team that made their name. The reason we think of Spurs as a Big Six team, or they are, and the reason they have the revenues of it, is because this is a team that achieved under Pochettino with prime Harry Kane, prime Son Heung-min, and prime Christian Eriksen, for example. Who on that squad at the moment is anywhere near the level of those players? They've gutted that team gradually in a way that we haven't even noticed. You know what I mean? They have a huge amount of injuries and they have some good players. They have no great players. And I have to say, like, I looked at those two lineups on Saturday evening and think Villa are way better than Spurs.
Yeah, the likes of Hugo Lloris as well, Jan Vertonghen.
You know,
there was like right through the squad. There was good quality.
Romero and Van de Ven, very, very good players, I would say. Yeah. Romero, you have to take the good with the bad with them, but like good player. So, and some decent players all the way through. Don't get me wrong. They're not poor. They're probably underachieving. But this idea that they're ready to be taken over by Poch again or by Xabi Alonso and everything will be okay, I just don't buy it.
They are the two most obvious poison chalices in the world, Tottenham and Manchester United. If you are a manager with any bit of stock, I just think you'd be stupid to go into either of them. So, somebody is going to be the person who turns it around and then they're going to get a massive boost from being that person. But I would play it safe. Xabi, do not go to either of those clubs if they come for you. Where do you want to go next, Tivo?
Yes, well, just moving on there to... I did mean to tell you about Evan Ferguson, of course, because he did get a bit of a knock at the weekend. Roma head coach Gianpiero Gasperini was out today playing down concerns that Ferguson could miss the Republic of Ireland's World Cup qualifying playoff in March. The striker picked up that knock in Saturday's win over Sassuolo. It's a back injury. Gasperini, though, says it's just a serious bruise and he'll sit out their Coppa Italia clash with Torino and should be back in action next week.
I saw this live. It was, he came to kind of show for a ball and a player went into the back of him, knee in the arse is what it was. And I'd say it really, really hurt. And he played for about 20 minutes afterwards with his hand on his arse the entire time. he just could not run it off. It just so obviously a really bad bruise. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing else it could be in that part almost. So he'll be fine, I would say.
Yeah.
Tottenham Hotspur have been listening to tonight's news round and they have acted quickly on the suggestion that their squad's not good enough, Nick.
Well, they seem to have stolen Conor Gallagher from Aston Villa with a new bid into Atletico Madrid. I did think we were getting Gallagher, Villa were getting Gallagher for pretty cheap on like a loan plus and then 25 million. But it seems like Spurs have gone in there with 40. So that seems more appropriate, I would say, for Conor Gallagher.
Yeah, that's good signing.
Yeah. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but we'll see.
We have news from Anfield then.
Yes, the former Ireland international Conor Hearn taking his League One strugglers Barnsley to Anfield tonight for a third round clash in the FA Cup. The Premier League leaders Liverpool are fourth in the Premier League, while the visitors are placed 17th in League One, meaning there's 57 places between the two sides in the English football pyramid. Hearn's team are without a win in any of their last four matches, featuring three defeats and one draw. He does have all but one member of his squad fit and available and rested for 2 weeks after their last two league outings were suspended. Arne Slot has gone strong tonight with his team selection. Mamard Aishvili is in goal. It's a back four of Frimpong, Gomez, Van Dijk and Robertson. Jones and McAllister in midfield. Ngamoa, Szoboszlai and Gakpo are the attacking midfield trio just behind Federico Chiesa. Just looking through the Barnsley team, there is one Irish player there in the starting team, Corey O'Keefe, starting for Barnsley this evening. Hearn is hoping that his players can go and express themselves.
Yeah, the last couple of times at Anfield, it's gone okay for Barnsley. So yeah, no pressure whatsoever. But no, look, once we put on a good show for us, it's really important. I think the last couple of times we've played Premier League teams, you know, we got done 6 against Brighton, 7 against Man United last year. can we come away from it and you know, like I said, put in a performance where we can be really proud. The lads have done it, put in a good show of themselves, and then move on in a stronger position.
Irish trio, Conor Barrett, David McGoldrick and Owen O'Connell on the bench as well for Barnsley tonight. That match kicks off at 7.45. Before that, we have had the fourth round draw. Liverpool, if they get through, will play Brighton at Anfield in the next round. A few Premier League sides have been drawn away from home, so chances maybe for a few upsets. Oxford United will host Sunderland. Hull City will entertain Chelsea. West Ham go to Burton Albion. Wolves away to Grimsby Town. Brentford going to Macclesfield, of course, who knocked out Crystal Palace. So Keith Andrews with an interesting tie there to look forward to. Leeds United away to Birmingham City. Elsewhere, Manchester City will host Salford City or Swindon Town. Salford will be an interesting tie there. Arsenal will be hosting Wigan Athletic in the fourth round. I think I've covered all the bases there.
Can we have a look into the history of Manchester City draws in this competition or in the Champions League as well, but we'll save that for another day.
Sorry, Villa Newcastle, mate.
Villa Newcastle, yeah. Villa, yeah. As usual, in the old hired around as they scrape through to, you know, to try and go on a cup run. But Man City, I'm pretty sure they drew Salford last year. Wasn't that like big occasion where Salford at the, you know, the coming of age and got hammered? City, I prove me wrong. I don't want to look it up because it will ruin the truth might ruin a good story here. But they will always, always get the easiest draw around. They just sauntered. Since they haven't played a Premier League team in the FA Cup since Sheikh Mansour took over.
You're right.
It's like even when they get to finals, like they played Watford in one of the cup finals, didn't they? They played Wigan and lost them.
Palace and lost them. It was Salford in the third round last year. They beat them 8-0.
The worst thing they did was they lost to Man United in one of those cup finals. It was Salford, yeah.
Yeah. Then they went on to play Leighton Orient. They beat them 2-1. Then they went on and played Plymouth.
There we go. This is the fifth round now. So they're in the quarterfinals already.
Quarterfinals without playing a Premier League side. But then it was all Premier League all the way home. So it was Bournemouth away.
Okay.
Nottingham Forest.
Quarterfinals.
In the semi final. And Crystal Palace.
That's a joke.
Yeah. Played there. Remember Paul Jarman's.
The easiest cup take their all runners time.
Up, take their runners up medals off them.
Yeah.
Remember Paul Jarman's in Newport County playing against them back in 2019. 4-1 win for City there. Down in Wales.
I think we need the stewards and
Paul
Jarman
scoring that one. Yeah, but they do. But
the FA Cup third round is not the same since Paul Jarman has come back to Ireland. He was just an absolute banker for a story.
Yeah.
You would pick up the phone to him on the 12th of January every year and be like, congratulations on scoring against Manchester United this weekend, Paul.
The last 12 months.
Yeah. How is life in Newport treating you, Paul? Yeah. Go back over. Give us a story in January.
Top FA Cup scorer of the 21st century or something, isn't he?
That's another reason why the weekend just gone didn't really pull me in. As far as I'm aware, there wasn't a whole pile of massive Irish angles to some of the underdog stories. You'd usually have somebody who's gone up through the ranks at the League of Ireland, who's gone over, who's soldiered away for 5 or 6 years in England and League Two, and then gets a big FA Cup win. We just didn't have that this year. And I think it is the exception to the rule, which is that there is one guy who shows up on the
right. I did watch Forest away to Wrexham on Friday night. Did anybody see that?
I've got James McLean.
A negative story. McLean missed the penalty.
Like the Wrexham thing is being held up as like some, I mean, pardon the pun, some sort of like Hollywood sort of fairy tale. Like them beating Nottingham Forest is nowhere near fairy tale level or magic of the cup. And I mean, would you be particularly surprised in 5 years' time they're actually above them in the English pyramid? Not at all. So we're not counting Wrexham.
That's just a bog standard.
One football team beats another on penalties.
A pain in me hoop watching Ryan Reynolds for half the match as well. Every time the camera had a chance, I went over to Ryan Reynolds to see what he was up to. But it was actually a really, really good match. It was a great tie. Forest trailing 2-0 at half time, came back. Callum Hudson-Odoi got a couple of goals. It ended up 3-3, and then they went to extra time. Penalties, and the goalkeeper for Wrexham, absolutely magnificent. He did the old Jordan Pickford trick with the all the penalties written on the drinking bottle. But poor old James McLean stepped up for the second penalty, whacked it over the bar, but he was thankful to his goalkeeper in the end that they managed to see out the victory with the penalty shootout.
Everton didn't score a penalty in their shootout against Sunderland. They missed
absolute nightmare.
And the other thing is, one Irish angle Uh-huh. John Rooney, manager of Macclesfield.
Of course.
He declared for Ireland, didn't he? I mean, he was nowhere near good enough to play for us, but I think he wanted to.
Okay, I'll give you that. The manager of the biggest story of the weekend is basically Irish. Yeah, that'll
as
do
good
it, right?
As, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to give it to John
Rooney.
He
never got around to actually getting the passport ready, but he could have if he wanted.
Round us up with the rest of today's football news then, Steve. We'll start with the latest on the Manchester United head coach vacancy.
Yeah, well, the club looks set to appoint Michael Carrick tomorrow as their caretaker head coach until the end of the season. United expected to wait until the summer to put Ruben Amorim's permanent successor in place. It's being reported this evening that the club chiefs will make the announcement tomorrow by the time the players return to training on Wednesday. That means Carrick is set to be in the dugout at Old Trafford for the Manchester Derby on Saturday afternoon with a match against Arsenal. The following Sunday, we'll have that one on Off the Ball. Carrick served as a caretaker in between Solskjaer, Ole Gunnar, that is, and Ralf Rangnick in the winter of 2021, winning 2 and drawing 1 in a 3-match spell. His former clubmate Darren Fletcher oversaw yesterday's FA Cup third-round exit to Brighton at Old Trafford and was hugely disappointed after the game.
I've had zero indication, and because all my energy and focus and concentrations had to be on these two games in such a quick turnaround and preparing the team, a free game week, you know, everything that I said. And I genuinely mean that. It's a massive responsibility to lead this club, and I've given it my best, and ultimately I'm disappointed to not be able to win a game or to get a result today. But I feel like there were some good things in there. Created a lot of chances, shots, things like that, but ultimately it wasn't enough. So I am more disappointed than anybody, really, because I care for the club and I want the club to do well and I want the players to do well, and I genuinely mean it's not about me. I've had my time as a player, it's in the bank now, it's done, loved every minute of it, was very lucky. It's all about them, but we need to help them, the club need to help them, and they need to help themselves.
Have you learned anything from the 2-match spell under Fletcher? Maybe even about what Amorim tried, what he got wrong, what he got right? Like, the change of formation obviously hasn't made anything better. But to be fair, that's the sort of thing that you'd expect needs a string of games.
Yeah, and I also think, like, they've two players that got knocked out of AFCON in Mbeumo and Ahmad will likely be back for the City game next week. And it's almost with Fernandez only coming back from injury and they still have those, you know, defensive injuries. It's not to suggest that we should be waiting to judge Manchester United, but I think given that they have changed system and changed manager, I think you wait and see what their strongest team looks like. But they were just as calamitous as ever in that game yesterday. Like, that was at home at Old Trafford. Like, we are at that point where now we are putting such kid gloves on when we're judging United. And they're at home there in the FA Cup, and it's just like, oh, well, of course they lost. Like, you know,
kid gloves are just low. Or equal expectations, reasonable expectations for where they're actually at. Like, so Carrick's gone in, and I mean, you kind of wish him well, and it's hard to differentiate between him and Fletcher or Solskjaer or even Van Nistelrooy. Maybe people who've watched every single game that Middlesbrough played can see future signs of a great manager in there. But as of now, I wouldn't necessarily say he stands out amongst that crop of former Manchester United players who've taken over as either interim or caretaker manager. But there is massive pressure on this Carrick situation now. And I'm not saying the pressure is on Michael Carrick. Like, the pressure is on the football club and those that have made the decision to remove Ruben Amorim, because they are within touching distance of Champions League places. That whether it's fair or not, come the end of the season, if Michael Carrick fails to get top 5 in the Premier League, the Manchester United fans will rightfully be enraged with the decision to change manager in the middle of the season, because he was within 1 point of the Champions League places.
Yeah.
Now, I know it's not necessarily fair that will be the case, but that will be the reaction.
Do you think so? Yeah. Do you think they like the United fans realistically thought they were heading towards the Champions League? Like,
but why not? They're 1 point.
Yeah, but there was no mad massive improvement. They had I'll get up the fixtures in a minute. They have an unbelievable run of fixtures, while all those around them are floundering with really tough games. That evens out over the course of the year. Like, they're coming up on a lot of hard games now in the next few weeks. Let's see where they are in March. Like, you know, I don't think they're playing well enough to suggest that they're the fifth best team in the league.
Not to relitigate last week or anything like that, but it would have just been such a smarter political move to let Amorim hang himself over the next couple of games.
I see where you're
coming
from,
the fixture list gets a little bit tougher. But anyway, we shall see how
it goes. Pressure is on their director of recruitment, Christopher Vivelle, their technical sporting director, Jason Wilcox, the CEO, Omar Barada, their CEO of Ineos Sports, Jean-Claude Blanc, and the Ineos director of sports, Sir Dave Brailsford, and of course, Sir Big Jim Ratcliffe, who is the Ineos chairman. all of those men, of course, who will be above Michael Carrick and just under the club's owners. So they're the men who may be the fall guys at the end of the season. I jest, of course. But it's just, it's just like, that's the ridiculous structure that we have at Old Trafford. And that's what is the major problem here. It's not who's ever managing the team. It's all of those people above the head coach who are meddling in the affairs of the head coach. And what kind of freedom Michael Carrick has in picking his team, selecting players, or what kind of input all of those men I've just named are going to have in what he does with the team between now and the end of the season is all over.
And especially when you're in there as interim manager and have no power, you have no political power whatsoever within it. So he's got no way of fighting back. Like, I feel like he's just onto a loser, really. But like, you have to take into account as well that like, where United are coming from is such a low base that I think there is that possibility of having that Solskjaer bounce, that sort of, you know, the we put the pride back in the team again and all this, and it kicks on like that. That can happen without them even finishing fifth down. I would say, if again, if performances match and, you know, they're losing by the odd goal to City or whatever it might be, you know, as opposed to, you know, getting, you know, playing well while losing games at Old Trafford constantly and that being an acceptable thing. The other way it could go, though, and you have to remember this, is when Solskjaer was sacked that they brought in Ragnick, and that was a disaster after 2 weeks. And they had this like long end of the season where they were slipping further and further down the table. Do you remember West Ham almost got past them and they nearly finished ninth or something, which at the time was horrendous for United before things have happened since. But like, think about it, out of both cups, I'm sure Andy Mitten mentioned it today because he tweeted at the same time as me last night about like Manchester United are going to have 40 games this season. You know, their lowest number in 111 years.
I do like that stat, but also
I know they had 22 teams in the league, but it was 1982. Like, that's still a huge amount of time ago, and obviously they're not in Europe, which would rarely happen.
82 is the last time they lost their first cup game in both competitions, which is a really, really good one. I must make an apology for saying that there was no great Irish angles over the course of the weekend in the FA Cup. Neil Ewing has been in touch with me, and this really is the magic of the cup from an Irish standpoint. So we'll be familiar with the fact that Manchester City smashed Exeter 10-1. Of course, Pierre Sweeney plays for Exeter. However, just before the game last week, there was a headline on the BBC website: Exeter City will be without captain Pierre Sweeney for their FA Cup third round tie at Manchester City. He is celebrating his testimonial year, but he is suspended, having been booked in each of the two previous rounds. So there's the magic of the cup.
He missed
an Irishman missed out on the 10-1 defeat to Manchester City.
I think
really
Jack
Dwight
Hayes got an OG in that game.
He also got an assist.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Magic of the cup.
Listen, we're going to turn our attention to some more action from the weekend after the break. Welcome back. It's Owen, Mick and Steve-O here in studio for our bumper Monday news round. Where are you going to next, Steve-O?
Yes, rugby next, Owen. Dorothy Wall and Erin King have returned to the Ireland women's squad after long injury spells. Last April, Wall underwent knee surgery while King needed an operation on her Achilles. The duo and 10 uncapped players are included in a 37-player squad for a three-day training camp at Abbottstown next Monday. Ireland's Six Nations campaign begins against England at Twickenham on April 11th. A former Ulster lock, Alan O'Connor, has joined the coaching team as the forward specialist after the departure of Alex Codling. Just moving on to club rugby then, Owen. Leinster head coach Leo Cullen boosted by the return of four players ahead of the trip to Bayonne in the Champions Cup. Gary Ringrose, RG Snaiman, Tig Furlong and Jimmy O'Brien back in training after that win against La Rochelle. Their options at prop are strained though, because a significant foot injury has ruled out Paddy McCarthy, while Andrew Porter is struggling with a calf problem. Moving on then to GAA, Owen, because the Kerry club on Gaeltacht, intermediate football champions, after 12-6 win against Glenullen of Derry at Croke Park. Fergal O'Shea's men proved too strong for their counterparts in the capital, running up a 9-1 lead at half time before going on to win by 6. That marks the 8th time aside from Kerry has won the All-Ireland Club Intermediate title since the competition's inception in 2003-04. Here's on Gaeltacht's Aidan Walsh speaking on TG Carr after the famous win.
No, I'm absolutely delighted. Just delighted for the club. I suppose there's been history in Croke Park that has been haunting Gaeltacht since 2004. So it's great that we're able to get over the line today for the community. And it's just pure relief, really. It was a fair battle. I know the scoreline doesn't really reflect how hard the game was. I just thought we played our tactics well. Probably one of the best games to watch, but I thought we just worked the ball well. We waited for the right time and we got scores at vital times, which got us over the line.
You moved into the parish, I think, last year.
So yes,
you've had a couple of seasons with them now. How have they adapted?
did you?
Yeah, no, very. It's my first season with the Gaeltacht, so I've been very fortunate and lucky that we've had a very successful year. So I know it's unbelievable. They're brilliant people. They've really opened their arms to me. And I suppose the GAA has really been a big help for me, just to get to know people. And a lot of pressure on now to really get good at the Irish going forward. So we'll start the classes now. We won't have training sessions now for a while, so we'll get going with that.
Yeah, he's set himself out a challenge there in TG Carr to be interviewed in Irish next time he's on. This was a very strange game yesterday, as he said there. Not the easiest on the eye. It was a strange sensation watching this game because it was like the 2010 World Cup and the Vuvuzelas in the stadium. The Glenullan fans brought their horns. Great atmosphere, great colour, but personal preference, the horns are very annoying watching a game. So every time on Gaeltacht were in possession, it was just a constant drone. Very like the Vuvuzelas in 2010 throughout their possession. But the problem was that their possession spells just lasted for ages because Glenullan sat deep and they let Owen Gaeltacht play in front of them. Even though they had the wind at their back, it was a very strange approach and subsequently a really poor game. And then Owen Gaeltacht kind of approached it like a cat playing with a mouse, and they had enough of a distance made up at halftime for this game to be over. So a very unspectacular game, which will delight everybody that was involved. Brilliant scenes down in Capel Street earlier today. I see Owen Gaeltacht were down in the Boar's Head. Cormac Begley was playing music in there, and it's this brilliant full circle moment where Paddy Ogue's father, Paddy O'Shea, would have started the tradition of bringing Sam Maguire to the Boar's Head the day after Kerry would win an All-Ireland, and then Paddy Ogue brings the All-Ireland Intermediate Trophy into the Boar's Head this morning as well. So that was a really, really nice thing to see, and the place was hopping at 11 a.m. this morning, so we missed out on the best rollover ever this morning.
Were you there?
No, I was not. I was watching and living vicariously through the Instagram Live that the pub put up on their social media. You got Ballymac next?
Well, this is the thing, because Bally McElligott of Kerry also landed the All-Ireland Club Junior Football Championship thanks to a 116-13 win against Clogher Éireann Óg from Tyrone at Croke Park. We could have a Kerry senior champion as well. If this is Dublin, lads, inter-county champions winning all the club titles, sweeping them up, we'd be having a debate over splitting the county in two.
No, he wouldn't.
What's going on here? Seriously.
I appreciate the tone. The
championship is too small in Kerry.
Unbelievable.
That's one thing that is definitely a problem, isn't it?
For who, though?
For the All-Ireland Championship.
For the All-Ireland Championship.
Yeah. Kerry do their own thing their own way. But what I'm saying is, and it's in no way to take away either All-Ireland, but like the Kerry team win the Junior All-Ireland. I think Kerry have more Junior All-Irelands, or maybe it's the same amount, than everybody else put together. Because junior teams in Kerry are at least intermediate at every other county. Because they're just small championships of like 8 teams or something, isn't it?
Well, it was 8. It went up to, the senior went up to 9 this year, and it's going up to 10 next year. So it's a gradual approach. But I'd always say, look, I mean, people who think it is unfair and that Kerry should have more senior teams for the national competition, to be fair, absolutely bang on. That's a total fair point. At the same time, if you're fixing the competition down there, who are you serving?
No, I think you should. I 100% agree with you. It doesn't matter. You do what's best for your own county. And actually, one of the problems in a lot of counties is far too many senior clubs. And if you look at it, most counties that are really trying to get their act together are trying to scale back in both football and hurling, going from maybe like 20 teams to 16 and so on. So
unless Croke Park put a number on it where they make their own national intermediate junior grade, where it's like your 16th best team or whatever the case may be, it represents your county at intermediate level.
Yeah. But then you haven't won a cup to get to the...
Yeah, exactly.
You get ranked
that
way.
That doesn't make sense either. So it's very hard for, when it comes to pretty much every issue that's local, which is then imprinted onto national, it's very hard for Croke Park to actually try and conquer any of those issues. But I think the championship down there has worked so well for the clubs and for the county team that they would be mad to change it too much. Going to 10 is already maybe a little bit of an admission that things haven't been fair overall for clubs. So, it's a conversation that we have most years. Although it's been 2-3 years. I think the last 2 years, there's been no Kerry winner at either, junior or intermediate. So the famine is over.
Yeah.
fair enough. Of course, it was a lovely clip of, was Cormac was playing in the dressing rooms yesterday? Or was it?
He was in the dressing rooms yesterday, I think, yeah.
Lovely, lovely clip going around social media. So listen, fair play to all the Kerry clubs, says the Dub True Gritted Teeth. On Saturday, Mark Hickey capped off an incredible Croke Park final. with the winning point as Cork's Kilbritton claimed a maiden All-Ireland Club Junior Hurling Championship title at the expense of Sligo's Eastkey. Extra time looked to be on the cards well into stoppage time. Kilbritton won a free, which Hickey converted to secure his club's place in the history books. He finished with 9 points on the night, but his forward colleague Ronan Crowley was crowned the man of the match and spoke afterwards also to our colleagues at TG Carr.
We'd be all looking up to Newstown lads, especially, Joe. They're playing Premier Senior Hurling in West Cork, and they're the only club in West Cork. And Joe, kind of feels like we're kind of not getting there now, because I won't say that. There's a long few steps to go by then, but it is unreal.
5 points down halfway through that first half. You looked a bit nervous. Tell us about the turnaround.
Yeah, look, it was kind of a few words we said between ourselves, the players on the pitch. We just said, dig deep. We've been in this position before, you know. And look, everyone did it in fairness, and kind of in the second half, the ball kind of dropped our way a bit. I know Andrew was unlucky with the red card in the second half, whatever, but, you know, it was a savage game.
Yeah, Ronan Crowley speaking there after Kilbritton's win. And in the intermediate final, Upper Church Drumband from Tipperary were 4-20 to 2-24 winners after extra time at Croke Park against Tyrone from Mayo.
Christy O'Connor was writing in the Examiner this morning, his headline saying that Saturday's All-Ireland Finals doubleheader was the best we've ever seen.
Yeah, I can't imagine it could get much better. It was fantastic. I was following along with the Tyrone Upper Church game. I didn't get to watch it, but I was getting like text messages just in all capital letters saying hurling. You know, it was one of those kind of games. You know, but the first game, the Kilbritton Eastkey game, was brilliant. And it's like, I have a friend from Eastkey who I was kind of like watching the match early on, and he was in Croker. I was kind of like almost slagging him, saying, "Geez, you wouldn't know one end of a hurl." Blah, blah, blah. And it was like, but as the game went on, you're like, "This is a great team," you know, and it was. Like they were, and there was great kind of excitement. You know, you go to like a football area like that, and they have a team that's come this far. There's brilliant excitement down there for it as well, and it's a great story. And Tyrone obviously are kind of like, they're the kings of the weaker county clubs, but at the same time, still within Mayo, like it's a brilliant story, and it's great to see. And obviously, they both lost, but they both lost kind of heroically. Like Eastkey lost two players in that game for red cards. You'd question. Certainly one of them anyway, the first one. But even when they were 15 against 14, they just answered everything all the way through, and you just genuinely didn't know what way it was going to go. But then, so I'm kind of leaning towards that as the underdog story, I suppose. And then when Kilbritton win, and you immediately see Philip Wall going to his brother Jamie on the sideline, you know, that was that photo that we all see in the paper, like that comes like 2 or 3 minutes into the, or two or like 30 seconds into their embrace, you know, it was brilliant. And then you see the parents of, TG Carr kept cutting to the parents of Oisin Gillane, who was like on that team, who died at 18 last year. And it's like what that means to, you see the, you know, the celebrations in the stand, and you're like, that could not mean more. Like, and again, it's almost going back to the Macclesfield thing in a way, like, isn't it? It's like, we just have to take these moments when sport is the pure thing that we all fell in love with. And again, it sounds a bit kind of like preachy and sappy, I suppose, but it really is the case. Like, we just have to grab them more when we find them, you know, because we just don't see it enough in the sport that we watch every week.
Yeah, 100%. And the club stories always produce something incredible like this. This is completely beside the point, but I think it was Mick Foley making the point over the weekend, and maybe Tommy was also saying it on the radio, that would it actually be a better outcome for there to be a hurling day and a football day, a triple header, junior, intermediate, senior, all in one card, put them together on one weekend.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute explosion.
Don't see why not, actually. Yeah. Because I've been in Croke Park for All-Ireland Finals back a good bit when they were on on Patrick's Day. And there does seem, like, there is a kind of a, people go for the day out and they'll stay in the bar for one of the games and they'll come out for the other, and it's rarely.
Yeah, I always did that. I always went on Patrick's Day. I wouldn't have been working unless there was a Dublin Cup involved. And when there wasn't, I'd always go, myself and a couple of pals, get the tickets and just make a day out of it. It was brilliant. So I used to love that Patrick's Day event, but that's not a bad call, actually, having the codes all on the same day. And I think you might actually get a bigger crowd at Croke Park, perhaps.
Yeah. One thing I'd say is that, like, it's been a phenomenal club season.
Yeah.
Like, it might take a lot of us actually to kind of get a bit of time for us to get into the swing of things, and maybe because it's whatever, season 3, season 4 of like the split season, that maybe we're still a little bit, you know, sulking away in August when it's like, where's our top tier GEA, but like the reason why that's there is that we can have an unbelievable like second half of December and early January for like nationally important GEA stories. And it doesn't matter that they're nationally important. I mean, the fact that they're locally important is all that matters with the club stories. But for a show like this, the stuff that's nationally important breaks through in the likes of December and January. And those stories have been absolutely magnificent. You do have one other bit of GEA news for us?
Yep. Clare are looking to join Waterford in the Munster Hurling League final. They need to avoid defeat to Cork tonight. It is going well for them so far. They are 12 points to 7 up in Mallow. Apparently Clare aided with the wind in that first half. So it looks like they will join Waterford in that Munster Hurling League final. Through and at 7 o'clock second half, just underway. And the details have been confirmed for Friday's O'Byrne Cup football final. Kildare will entertain Westmeath at St Connolly's Park in Newbridge for a half 7 throw-in.
Right then, the NFL wildcard weekend was the best in living memory, I think.
Well, I can tell you the San Francisco 49ers came from behind twice in the final quarter to knock out defending champions Philadelphia as a thrilling NFL playoff series continued last night. The Eagles were the NFC's third seed, so had home field advantage for wildcard weekend, but fell at the first hurdle as the sixth seed 49ers produced a 23 points to 19 upset. The AFC sixth seed also won on the road with the Buffalo Bills claiming a late 27 to 24 win at third seed Jacksonville. That kept alive Josh Allen's hopes of reaching his first Super Bowl, with the NFL's reigning most valuable player having put the Bills back in front with 1 minute 4 seconds remaining. The New England Patriots then beat the Los Angeles Chargers 16-3 to claim their first playoff victory since the team's sixth Super Bowl win in 2019. That ended a nail-biting start to the season's playoffs, with the first four games having all featured game-winning touchdowns inside the final 3 minutes, with the winning margin no more than 4 points. They also featured 12 lead changes in the final quarter, a record for a single postseason, and there are still 7 games to come before Super Bowl 60 on February 8th.
It's incredible.
Nice set up there.
This is a weekend that often is a complete dud. You get excited because it's knockout football, but for 4 games out of 4 until the Patriots-Chargers games, to not know what way the game was going at the two-minute warning was something else.
That lead changed that. I was going to say, I didn't have the exact way, but I knew that they all 4 games changed leads in the last 3 minutes. Is unbelievable. Like, it is. And you were, like, it was heart attack stuff for them all. Like, you know, it really was. The Bills Jags game was of such high quality as well in the second half, you know, and it was so, you kind of felt like, this is Josh Allen, Buffalo Bills quarterback, versus the world, kind of on his own. His team is not great. It's of the years they've had a chance to compete, he's probably got the worst supporting cast that he's had. And he was up against Trevor Lawrence, who was the next big thing and hasn't materialized, but he's won the last 8 games and he's on the best form of his career. It was a great game to watch. It was just then, it was like low scoring, and then suddenly touchdown, and the Bills just got it done.
I mean, I love the Buffalo Bills, always have done. Or at least I'm hopping on the bandwagon here. Like, it's a weird one because I find a sense of repetitiveness with the Buffalo Bills story every season, where Josh Allen's amazing, the team is very, very good. And then the Kansas City Chiefs come along and ruin their dreams in either the AFC Championship game or the divisional round the week beforehand. There's no Kansas City Chiefs at the moment, but there could be a case where it's the same old situation. Like, the Bills are most famous for losing 4 Super Bowls on the bounce in the early 1990s. It feels that something similar is happening at the moment, but now is the chance for Josh Allen and the Bills to break that, because making a Super Bowl will be a breakthrough. Winning the Super Bowl is a different story, but this team has never made the Super Bowl despite being a really, really talented bunch. And I don't know, is it the fans jumping through the tables, or is it more Josh Allen? But either way, I've just really loved this team as the years have gone by, admittedly only really hopping on the bandwagon every January.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He seems to have a new injury every time they talk about him. And again, like, you know, he's kind of dragging a kind of a ragtaggle group through, and you find like there'll be a hero or two that we don't know too much about over the next couple of weeks if they are to do it. But it does feel like we haven't had a kind of a wild card team come through in a while. It's been like the last couple of years have been like 1 versus 2 in the AFC Championship game and the NFC Championship game. A wild card team hasn't kind of come through to win it all in a while, and it does feel like if it's been set up all year, I think, for the Bills to kind of be that team.
At the end of the Bills game, there were 2 huge tush push moments.
Yeah,
one of which got them 11 yards. This is the
the mildly controversial Philadelphia Eagles tactic, which Sean McDermott, the Bills coach, has been on the record saying it should be banned, and his team benefited from it last night.
Until it is, he'll take advantage of it. Yeah, but you see, what happens usually with a touch push is you go over the first down marker on 4th and 1 or whatever, and then the play ends because the defense holds it up. But it was a very, very strange thing in that it was like the Jags defenders, at least two of them, sort of went, oh, he's got the first down, and they stood off, but the play wasn't over, so he went all the way down to, they initially gave a touchdown and then eventually brought it back to the 1 yard line, and then that was it. They were going to score then. They let them score in the next play, and it meant then that the ball was in Lawrence's hand and he was going to have to do something in the last minute of the game, but there was no guarantee they were going to score before that when they were on the 10 yard line. So really weird play, but the whole thing, again, it was just another thing to sum up how dramatic all the games are, starting on like the Carolina game on against the Rams on Saturday evening. That would have been, they were 10 point underdogs even though they were at home, and for much of the game, for most of the game, it looked like they were going to win it. So yeah, just drama all the way around.
Yeah, I think the Bills' bad luck has been covered well in that that Dallas Cowboys documentary on Netflix. Yeah. It's really, really good. But Tampa Bay Buccaneers last wildcard winners in 2020.
Yeah,
there's seven winners apparently. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
most
of those
of them were the Giants.
Since 2000. But Ravens, Steelers, Giants, Packers, Buccaneers.
Do you like Tom Brady as a commentator?
Yeah, well, he's getting better, I think. Like, yeah. It's his second year now.
He's more emotional than he used to be. He's Gary Neville. He's like just shouting randomly in the middle of plays because he is a human being who gets excited by what he's watching.
Yeah, and loves the game. Like, and I do feel like last year he was saying, where am I going to come in here? Where am I supposed to talk? And you can imagine how much you're thinking about all that stuff. And then as soon as he knows what he's doing now, and then you can hear, like last night, he talked, like he did a, there's a video I'm going around of showing how to throw the ball in the wind.
Saw that.
And it's like a slight, if you throw it like that, you're screwed. If you throw it like that, you're screwed. If you throw, you know, and it's like, wow, yeah, not a bad guy to have in the booth.
Dermot Keane has been in touch to say, make some great playoff games over the weekend, and especially the Niners win against the reigning champs, even with the injury to George Kittle. Another tough away game in Seattle next weekend.
Yeah, George Kittle did his Achilles, and the 49ers played Seattle in the last regular season game last week and were well beaten, and that was for the number one seed, so it mattered. So might not be a great matchup for them, but they've done unbelievable. All their players are injured, basically. Okay. They've got nobody and they're still now in the last 8.
Seahawks favourites to win the Super Bowl at this point. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Michael McCarthy, thank you very much. We've got Monday Night Rugby with the Dream Team coming up after 8 o'clock. Henry Winter and Gillan Balagay joining us from 9 to 10 on the Football Show. Send us your opinions.